Show. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! A minute past the hour of 6 o'clock for this, the live version of the Monday edition of the March volume, no, April volume, oh boy, am I in trouble, the April volume of Head On with Bob Kincaid, that would be me. I had a long weekend, big weekend, inspiring weekend. I took off out of here, you know, I played hooky on Friday, as you all know, because I was getting ready for a road trip. I took a little trip to the suburban outskirts of D.C. Went and visited with some really, really wonderful, wonderful people at the Accotink Unitarian Universalist Church in Fairfax County to talk with them a little bit about mountaintop removal. And what a welcoming, warm experience my traveling companion and I both had there. We answered a lot of questions about what's happening here in the hills and hollers of West Virginia, what the likes of Console and Arch and, of course, Massey are doing to our culture, our neighborhoods, our cities, our towns, our people. And I believe we're successful in our attempt to raise awareness of what happens when you flip that little magic switch and the lights go on. Have I mentioned lately, if you haven't done it, that you probably ought to, go to ilovemountains.org, put your zip code into the little box there, and see what your connection is to mountaintop removal, even if you think you don't have one, because I just about guarantee that you do. But it was a wonderful trip, but it was a fast trip, too. Up on Saturday, back yesterday, with a little bit of sleep in between. So, it was a working weekend, shall we say. I'm a little tired, but we'll get through 3 hours tonight just fine. Don't you worry about that in the least. A programming note at the top of the program for you. Tonight was going to be Peter Godbold's return to the air. But the, shall we say, internet gods decided otherwise. Down the dirt road there in North Florida, Peter's having just critical telephone problems and internet problems, so he won't be able to connect tonight, but they swear to him, they swear that they will have it fixed by tomorrow, so we should have Peter back with us for a Tuesday evening show, and I sincerely hope so. I've missed him horribly. Now, down to business. You know that I have, with all that is in me, done my dead-level best to avoid the primary season kabuki theater between Senator Clinton and Senator Obama. They are both adequate to the task of being President of the United States. And I frankly am just not willing to get into the part, you know, because neither of them were my first choice, I'm not going to get into the partisan sniping. I will, however, comment when I see something that just makes me scream BS. And that is what this business about so-called elitism and Senator Obama's comments on guns and Bibles and people who have been left out of the process for the last 25 years has done to me. I started hearing about it on Friday. Wished I was on the air. heard about it on the radio all day Saturday, heard about it on the radio all day Sunday, blah, 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 elitism, blah, 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 guns and Bibles, blah, 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 talking down to small town America, blah, 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 blah. And it just made me sick. Frankly, and I guess this is why Senator Obama is running for president and I am not, because one must be a bit politic to do politics. Frankly, I would like it if he was much more stern in talking about this stuff. And frankly, it struck me as a note of patent desperation. And look, let's get this clear, okay? I don't live in a high-rise in Manhattan, okay? I live in a falling-down house in the hills and hollers of West Virginia that needs a new roof and a new HVAC system. We need a lot of work done around here, and we do it as fast as we possibly can. I am the people. Ooh. There's some real language problems with that sentence, but I don't have time for that right now. I, Agnes and I, our family, our neighbors, are the ones, in large part, that Obama was talking about. And I wish he would shout it from the damned rooftops. Angry? Small town America? Small town America had damned well better be angry. Small town America would do well if it had the pitchforks, the torches, the boiling tar, and the busted open feather pillows out, ready to march on Washington.
Oh, he's being an elitist.
The hell is elitist about talking about a segment of the population that has been ignored for low 25 or some odd years? Where did those jobs go? Why aren't they coming back? I would like a little, I'd like, but you know, that's the buzzword that the media plays on us.
Oh, he sounds angry. He's angry. We can't have any angry people. Angry people can't be president.
Bug spray. The angrier the better, as far as I'm concerned. And, you know, look, like I said, I've stayed out of this. I'm not going to call anybody an effing anything, because I don't work like that. But shame on Senator Clinton for trying to turn this into a campaign issue. There wasn't anything elitist in what that man said. There wasn't anything elitist in what he said at all. Rural America, urban America, America that lives in high-rises, and America that lives in the projects, and America that lives in housing developments in small towns, every working American in this country, poor Americans, middle-class Americans, ought to be up in arms at what has been done to this country for the last long, miserable, intolerable 8 years. The President of the United States, George Bush, has told the American people that he knew. I mean, we're not even doing plausible deniability anymore, are we? This is open, in-your-face contempt for the American people. Mark Levine pointed it out a little less than an hour ago. Hell, a little less than a half an hour ago. The media are simply not interested in the fact that George W. Bush approved of torture, put the imprimatur of his approval on the notion that led to Abu Ghraib, or whatever the heck. He put his stamp of approval on it, on torture, on dogs, attack dogs being used on prisoners, on
everything that was in those photographs and in the photographs that we still haven't seen, everything had the seal of approval of George W. Bush on it. And we have the confession. Of the Rumsfelds, and the Cheneys, and the Condys, and the Colons, and the Ashcrofts, that they personally hashed it out and decided to engage the United States of America in torture. And somehow it's elitist to suggest that small town America ought to damned well be pissed off about that? God almighty! Why wouldn't they be? This simply astonishes me. It frankly astonishes me that Senator Clinton would go there. It astonishes me even more that when she did go there, that Senator Obama would back down and, I might have misspoke. I don't know. Yeah, I didn't mean that. 'Cause he did. When in the name of heaven are the Democrats going to learn to stop backing down? When are the Democrats going to learn the difference between attacking Republicans and attacking each other? I don't know. I simply don't know. But here, let me explain this real quick. Like, if you're on hold, please stay that way. I will come to you in just a moment. But I want to finish this. Let's understand where the mindset comes from that attacks Barack Obama for suggesting that people are angry and frustrated with their government for what their government has done to them. He said, you go into those small towns in Pennsylvania, and like a lot of small towns in the Midwest, the jobs have been gone now for 25 years and nothing's replaced them, and they fell through the Clinton administration and the Bush administration, and each successive administration has said that somehow these communities are going to regenerate, and they have not. And it's not surprising then that they get bitter, they cling to guns or religion or antipathy to people who aren't like them, or anti-immigrant sentiment or anti-trade sentiment as a way to explain their frustrations. The perfect end line for that, Senator Obama, the next time you make the speech, and I really wish you would, the perfect end line for that is, and that's how right-wing radio stays on the air. Because it is. But I want to take you down the literary road for a minute here and help you see the mindset, like you need help, and point out the mindset, at least as I comprehend it, and you are free to disagree if you wish, point out the mindset that sees what Senator Obama said as somehow objectionable. If you've been listening to this program for any period of time at all, and most of you have, although there are newbies every day, new listeners who haven't, well, then you know, or you will know now, that one of my favorite pieces of writing in the entire English language, and it is so grand that I suppose that if I were literate in a bunch of other languages, it would still be among my favorites, is Harper Lee's To Kill a Mockingbird. And if you remember the plot structure of that novel, you will recall that it centers on the trial of an innocent African-American man named Tom Robinson. That Tom Robinson had a manufactured charge of rape levied against him for the for a bogus assault on a po-white trash woman by the name of Mayeller Yule. And the Yules were the lowest of the low in that book and in that community. And Mayella developed a crush on Tom Robinson and made a pass at him, and her daddy beat her mercilessly for it, and then manufactured the rape charge as a way of explaining the injuries she received. In the final analysis of why the jury, in the face of evidence that he was absolutely innocent of the charges levied against him, why the jury went ahead and convicted Tom Robinson, it is pointed out that what he was truly guilty of was an absolutely unpardonable sin in a racist community. For Tom Robinson, a black man, had exhibited pity for a white person. He felt pity for the miserable existence that Mayella Yule was forced to tolerate. And that is what you have at the core of all of this Sturm und Drang over Senator Obama's comment about bitter Americans. He is not guilty of elitism. He is not guilty of not being connected to small-town America. What he is guilty of, and what Senator Clinton's campaign is pointing out, is the same thing that Tom Robinson was convicted of in To Kill a Mockingbird. Senator Obama, in this racist nation, is guilty of having pity on poor whites. Plain and simple. And in this racist nation, that is still not tolerable. And that is why I say shame on Senator Clinton's campaign for flogging this non-issue like they have. It is no different than the flogging of Tom Robinson.
Pennsylvanians don't need a president who looks down on them.
See? See? Said Senator Clinton.
They need a president who stands up for them, who fights hard for your future, for your jobs, your family.
They don't have any jobs, Senator Clinton! Their families, their children can't go to college! The mills are shut down! And they ain't coming back. That's the problem, Senator Clinton. They don't have any future. Because of NAFTA and CAFTA and SHEFTA and PEFTA and PAFTA and SEFTA and all the vile, filthy Ponzi scheme dodges that have shipped jobs out of places like Pennsylvania and West Virginia and Tennessee and Kentucky and Alabama and South Carolina and Georgia. And yes, New York and Massachusetts, and yes, Texas, and yes, Kansas, and yes, 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 America! Small town America, which was the backbone of this country, has been decimated. This is not about my advocacy for one candidate or the other, because I will tell you truly that had Senator Clinton made a comment like this, and had Senator Obama come out and said something stupid and turned it into a tempest in a teapot, I would have said the same thing. I like the people in Pennsylvania, Kentucky, Indiana, and North Carolina, a couple other states maybe, still have a primary vote as compared to the rest of the nation. You guys couldn't pick a nominee and keep my vote from counting. So my vote counts now, and I'm going to go and I'm going to make it in the middle of May. I got an idea where I'm going, but I am not decided at this point. And as such, I don't feel bad about pointing out when our candidates screw up, either of them. Would it have been better if Senator Obama had made his remarks directly to, you know, here in the hills we say, if you got something to say, you say it to my face. Would he have been better off to have said it to people's face in Pennsylvania? Damn right. Lesson. That's a lesson for you there, Senator Obama. It might, and that's probably where all the elitism crap comes from, is the fact that he felt like he had to go to San Francisco to talk about it. San Francisco didn't need to hear it, Senator. The people in Hardscrabble, PA needed to hear it. Because, see, this is interventionist stuff. This is the stuff that you do when you're sobering up a drunk. This is the stuff that you do when you're getting a junkie clean.
Oh, listen, Bob's calling people in Pennsylvania junkies!
Say it to our faces, Senator. You know, one wonders what the Clinton campaign would have said when Winston Churchill said, I have nothing to offer but blood, tear, toils, and sweat. Prime Minister Churchill is saying that the people are bloody. Prime Minister Churchill is saying that the people are crybabies. Well, the people of the United Kingdom don't want to be told that they're crybabies. We're here to talk about... Why do you think I don't like talking about this stuff anymore? I feel dirty every time I do. Because more than anything else, what opens up for me is this is like one of those things that blossoms every 7 years or something, one of those big funky orchids, and when it does blossom, it smells like a rotting corpse. This is one of those. This dog and pony show. But you know what? Senator Obama, say it to our faces. Dare to say it to our redneck faces. Because you know what? We can take that. It's when you give somebody an opening to argue that you're talking behind our backs with the Chablis and Bree crowd that people are it's possible to get them worked up and, you know, and have it stick when they call you an elitist. Say it to our faces, Senator Obama, and we'll talk to you about why it is the way it is. Here in West Virginia, if you want to come talk to us about it, Senator Obama, we can tell you how there were 100,000 and more underground coal mining jobs before Mountaintop Removal found us. But once Mountaintop Removal got started, now there's less than 15,000 people doing that. We know about jobs disappearing, Senator. We know about good union jobs disappearing, Senator. And we can talk with you about it. And we won't be ugly. We won't be nasty. We'll be honest. Now, Hillary Clinton's gone and done herself a shot of Imperial Canadian whiskey. Why won't she drink American whiskey? No, I guess Imperial's American blended whiskey or something. But anyway, she did a shot of... She did an Imp Narn. Imperial whiskey in an Iron City or some such. It gives me the blind shivers just thinking about it. So, Senator Obama, what you need to do is come here to West Virginia, and we'll heist the jug with you. We'll get out some of Uncle Cephas's vest, you know, the white lightning with the half a peach floating in the bottom of it. And we'll pass it around, and we'll get things straightened up, and you can look us in our eye, and we'll look you in your eye, and we'll talk about stuff that really matters. Guns? Probably best not to talk to redneck America about its guns, because we may talk a lot about the Bible, but we worship the damn guns, okay? Just get that straight. Just understand that. That's how we are. We're funny about our guns. I mean, there are people here in redneck America that keep their guns in safes and their monies and their money in the sugar dish. Okay? Really. So, you know, let's just try to get square on some of that stuff. And hopefully, you know, if you guys want to talk about it, I welcome you to do so. So, you know, chime right in if that's your wish. And we'll go to the phones right now. Hi, welcome to the program.
It's Susan.
Hey, Susan, what's up?
Well, I don't live in Pennsylvania.
No, that you don't.
But I'm one of those bitter voters.
Damn straight! Why isn't the whole country bitter?
My job's been outsourced. We can't even get my husband affording to go to the VA. We're living on a taxable income of under $12,000 a year. You goddamn right I'm bitter.
Yeah. Now, who done it to you?
Well, let me see. Started with Ronald Reagan.
Mm-hmm.
And then worked all the way up, all the way through all those presidents, and included William Jefferson Clinton.
Every
Bushies, and including this moron we got now.
Yeah.
When your government abandons you, the only thing you got left is bitter. And the government and the people in Washington ought to be damn glad they're not trying to deal with an armed insurrection.
Well, that's the thing that I don't get. I mean, why is it? Yes, it's bitter. There should be a bitter taste in all of America's mouth. And it should come from an illegal war, an illegal occupation. It should come from the millions of disappeared jobs. I mean, look, just on pure numbers alone, even after 8 years, George W. Bush still has not gotten to the job creation level that Bill Clinton got to in maybe the first 5 years in office.
Yeah, nowhere near it. And, oh, by the way, okay, first of all, Hillary, I gotta tell you, I'm a little bit younger than Hillary, but I'm the same generation.
Okay.
I gotta tell you, nobody that I grew up with or knew had a summer house. That was for rich people. Don't hand me this, woman of the people. What?
Yeah, don't want to hear the story about the log cabin and learning to read by candlelight. No, not buying it.
Horse crap. And as for McCain, who's also jumped on this bandwagon?
Yeah, McCain can just shut up. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
Son of admirals and nobody, and Daddy used to be in the Navy, and I know nobody is more of an elitist than an admiral.
Well, that's why they're admirals, isn't it?
You bet.
I mean, they could, you know, they could be a water tender third class, but they, you know, they want to be an admiral, so, you know, they don't want to do the knuckle busting work.
Yeah, you want to talk about elitism? Jeez Louise.
And now the pissing match has gone on to, you know, Hillary says, you know, don't criticize our right to keep and bear arms. And he says, you know, she doesn't need to be running around like some sort of Annie Oakley out there, like she's in the duck blind every weekend.
Did you see that full clip?
Yeah, I did.
I thought it was great.
Well, it certainly told me what my bumper music's going to be for the at least the end of this segment.
At least he came back, and he didn't just try and stand above the fray. He was getting back.
But what bothers me is the backup factor on the first time through. Well, you know, maybe I misspoke Sorry.
Yeah, that bothered me. That bothered me.
Because you know what? If he's the nominee, and I don't have a problem saying this. If he's the nominee, he's going to get a whole lot meaner than anything that Senator Clinton is dishing out right now.
Yeah, and he needs to develop some mean. Because when it comes time to face Republicans, they're going to dump a whole boatload of crap on him.
Yeah, that's what I'm getting at. And by mean, I understand what you mean. Let's recharacterize that just a little bit. How about a whole boatload of righteous indignation? Not self-righteous indignation, but righteous indignation.
You got a much better... That's why you're the broadcaster and I'm not. You have a much better way with the English...
Because you know what? The people that Obama was talking about have been used and abused for years on end. The Clinton administration... And the Clinton campaigns, more particularly, had to run uphill with both feet in buckets trying to get rural America to pay attention. Because the whole time that Bill Clinton was running campaigns, you had the Republicans, talking about, well, oh, he's a liberal. Oh, you're going to get your God. You hate your God and your guns. And liberals don't like Jesus real good. And so he knows what that fight was. And that's why this is a little bit shocking, because you know what? There's another half of this issue where I want to look at rural America that isn't liberal, like me, and explain to them that they have damned well gotten what they have voted for over the years. Rural America thought Ronald Reagan was the neatest thing since sliced bread.
That's what I told my father. I hate to admit this. My father, before he died, voted for Ronald Reagan. And I told him, you get that man in office, and it's the worst thing this country's ever seen. Well, the country proceeded to go to hell in a handbasket, and I looked him straight in the eye and said, you happy now?
Of course, I saw that... You've seen the diary quote from Ronald Reagan, haven't you? For some reason, it's been making the rounds, and I received it in my email today. Ronald Reagan had a diary entry about George W. Bush, and so far, I have not been able to disprove it.
Oh, the one where he says,
here it is. The diary quote is from May 17th, 1986, apparently. And
how worthless he is?
Yeah. Let's see, what is it? I can't do Reagan right now. A moment I've been dreading. George brought his ne'er-do-well son around this morning and asked me to find the kid a job. Not the political one who lives in Florida, the one who hangs around here all the time looking shiftless. The so-called kid is already almost 40 and has never had a real job. Maybe I'll call Kinsley over at the New Republic and see if they'll hire him as a contributing editor or something. That looks like easy work. I gotta check this out and see if it snopes us up. But I haven't seen...
Been making the rounds for years.
Oh, I know, but it's come back around again. And I think it's well that it should. Because, you know, they want to worship Ronald Reagan.
Uh-huh.
Well, Ronald Reagan apparently wouldn't have peed on George W. Bush if his guts were on fire.
And on top of that, Ronald Reagan was no saint. Ronald Reagan was an idiot.
Yeah,
whose brain was dizzily melting out of his ears.
You'll get no fight out of me on that.
Alzheimer's is a progressive disease. He had that before he was ever elected.
I believe it. You know, and that's why he made that promise of, you know, if anybody ever thinks I'm slipping, I'll step down, and then not another word was heard about it. That's why he said that... he would have himself tested, but he never had himself tested, or else he had himself tested, and they said, you've got it, and he's, well, gone.
Well, I'm not leaving.
You know.
Yeah.
But I'd like to, I'd like to see Senator Obama get his back up about this and take that discussion to Pennsylvania.
And I'd like to see him, like you said, full of righteous indignation, because it's about time that somebody got angry on the behalf of the American people. The last person I saw did it was Bobby Kennedy.
Yeah, there have been some flashes here and there, but those people have a way of not getting elected too. I mean, there was no doubt that John Edwards was talking about that stuff. Dennis Kucinich has been talking about that stuff for 8 years. But apparently, but then again, you know, maybe. Oh dear, Rural America may, this, come on, let's just, if we don't do anything else on this program, Susan, let's shoot straight. How much of rural America's problems are self-inflicted wounds?
All of them. Or most of them. How many times did they vote values, voters? You know, go for the values candidates, which meant Republicans.
Now, see, I think...
How many times?
I think Obama would have done better, rather than saying, what's the quote, so that they cling to guns or religion or antipathy to people who aren't like them. Maybe he would have been better off saying they cling to guns or fundamentalism. Because, you know what, for me, there's a...
Or if he could just stop it, frustrated.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I don't think that religion in general, I don't think a Buddhist in small town PA is part of the problem.
No. Pardon the description, people, but I gotta say it. It's these.
Oh darn! I gotta interrupt.
Farmers who insist on voting their quote values. Never mind that it's against their best interest, but they're going to vote their values so the queers can't get married. And then they find out they're losing everything.
Well, it turns out that the Reagan quote is not true. Darn, I knew that was too good to be true.
Awkward. Too bad.
So, you know, darn it.
But you know as well as I do that those brock-headed farmers voted for exactly what I was talking about.
Yeah. Yeah, they did.
I come from farmers.
Look, how many...
They could be some of the most brock-headed, stubborn, dumbass people on the planet.
And I've tried to avoid using a phrase that's been bandied about quite a bit in the primary season with regard to one candidate or the other. But this latest tempest in a teapot, I think I finally have to come out and use it. This latest tempest in a teapot is Rovian. To take something that was not said, attribute it to another person, and then demand that the person apologize for it is nothing if not Rovian or Atwater-esque.
Yeah.
Now, that doesn't change the... I would guess, if I were asked to place a bet right now, I'm guessing Hillary wins West Virginia. But,
oh, by the way, I have a meeting scheduled with the Obama campaign here in Columbia County. So anything you want me to tell them about mountaintop removal, and they know I'm coming in armed to the teeth about mountaintop removal, shoot it to me, will you?
Sure thing. But, you know, take your issues. Deal with Oregon stuff, too. Because God...
That is Oregon stuff.
Well, that's true. We're all downstream.
Damn straight. A list of the rivers that are, major rivers that are being polluted. the impact the entire Eastern Seaboard would be helpful.
Well, it would be, wouldn't it? But
so I can say, hey, guys, then once I have the rivers, I can go look up the cities and say, okay, these cities are going to shortly become uninhabitable because they have no water. Da 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 da.
Yeah. Well, I tell you what, Susan. Our salvation lies in the fact that this process is all but over where the primaries are concerned.
Thank you, God.
When does has your primary mail-in voting already started?
No, we haven't got the ballots yet. We should get them shortly, and then the actual date of the primary is May 20th. So they have to be postmarked by May 20th. So we'll get the, it won't be too long before we get the ballots, and then you can take them in any time before that time.
Okay, good deal. Well, you know, I don't know, is it in doubt in Oregon? I mean, have you seen, I mean.
From what I can tell, Hillary ain't taking Oregon.
Is she politicking there? I mean, campaigning at all or anything? I mean,
well, Chelsea was here. She was here briefly, but Chelsea was here. And from what I could tell from the film, she didn't have much of an audience. Obama walked in and immediately built they had people waiting for hours, you know. That was the day Richardson endorsed. And they had people waiting all over the state, anywhere he went. And I understand both candidates are going to be back. But what I'm going into these, they're starting a grassroots deal and opening offices all over to make sure people are registered and have, you know, and everything. Which is standard Barack procedure. They go in and they start a voter registration drive. And then all of a sudden you have all these new voters who all end up voting for Obama. As far as West Virginia is concerned, as far as I'm concerned, I have statements Hillary's made with, you know, as far about NPR. I'm going in with them. And personally, I don't find them very good at all. And I have the rest of the stuff, and I'm going to be pulling everything I can find.
Good, good. Well, you know, the folks that are working for him out there may have never even heard of it before.
Well,
they will when you're done with them, Susan.
Oh yeah, they're going to get chapter and verse, and then I'm going to hit them with a piece of resistance. I'm going to tell them why I'm talking about West Virginia, that nice little cop mine that they're going to be trying to put in right next to St. Helens.
Ah, oh, so you've got the connection angle. That's beautiful. That's beautiful.
Uh-huh.
Your mind is like a steel trap, and it never stops opening and closing, you know? That's a great connection. Of course, you know, I don't know. Even if I was desperate for a job, I don't know if I'd want to be mining next to Mount St. Helens.
I wouldn't either, because the minute they start letting off high explosives, they're going to become intimately acquainted with the terms pyroclastic flow and what the slang term crispy critter means. Fortunately, it will be the last thing they learn.
And, it's one of those lessons that they won't be able to pass on personally, because they will have passed on.
Yeah, unfortunately, also, the company that sent them in there, they'll just shrug. What do they care?
Right, you know. That,
they're just workers.
Yeah, just yeah, it's just working people. Yeah, they were just desperate for a job. People who are desperate for a job will do anything. Yeah, I know, I know. Well, Susan, have yourself a wonderful evening.
Well, and you too, and give my love to Agnes.
And our best to Donald, please.
Okay.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
All right, let's look at this thing in process and in progress. Joe Lieberman, you know, we call him Lieberman now because that's what he does, he lies. Joe Lieberman showed up on a radio show today. It's a radio show that is called the Brian and the Judge radio show. Wow, I'll tell you what, there's some creativity for you. Some dude named Brian and Judge Napolitano. And he shows up on that program, and Judge Napolitano asks what can only be termed a loaded question of Senator Lieberman. You got to hear it for yourself.
Hey, Senator Lieberman, you know Barack Obama. Is he a Marxist as Bill?
Where did that come from? Is he a Marxist? Well, that's because the New York Times decided to hire Bill Kristol. And he put a column out today in which he says that Senator Barack Obama, because of his bitterness remarks, sounds like the line that Karl Marx used about religion being the opiate of the masses, which it kind of is, but never mind. So that's where that came from. So we're gonna get some Joe Mandem on that issue.
Hey, Senator Lieberman, you know Barack Obama. Is he a Marxist, as Bill Kristol says might be the case in today's New York Times? Is he an elitist like your colleague Hillary Clinton says he is?
Well, you know, I must say this is a good question. I know him now for a little more than 3 years since.
That's a good question, Senator Lieberman? A good question? Senator Obama, is he a communist? A Marxist? Does he want to eat your baby wrapped between the covers of the Bible that he takes from your hands? Well, that's a good question.
He came into the Senate, and he's obviously very smart, and he's a good guy. I will tell you that there...
Oh, boy, he's called him a good guy. And here comes the damnation.
In this campaign, I've learned some things about him, about the kind of environment from which he came ideologically, and, you know, I'd hesitate to say he's a Marxist, but he's got some positions that are far to the left of me.
Far to the left of you, Senator Lieberman? Adolf Hitler's far to the left of you, Senator Lieberman! You've never met an Arab that you didn't want slaughtered! Joe Lieberman is a genocidalist! Joe Lieberman is a warmonger! Oh, and remind me, warmongers, let's talk about warmongers in a little bit.
I think mainstream America, and I did think this whatever you call it.
Okay, I interrupted that, so let's get that in its fullness. May have to back up for this.
I'd hesitate to say he's a Marxist, but he's got some positions that are.
Now let's time out. Bob's Language Corner. Because words, as the Republicans reminded us during the impeachment of Bill Clinton, mean things. In fact, I think Joe Lieberman reminded us of that too, didn't he? Because he had a screaming hissy about something that was absolutely none of his business. I'd hesitate. What is it? You know, Dr. Freud, emergency telephone. Pick up the telephone, Dr. Freud. What the hell does that mean? I'd hesitate to say he's a Marxist. That doesn't mean he wouldn't say he's a Marxist. That means he'd say, is he a Marxist? Beat, 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 beat. Yeah, he's a Marxist. That's hesitating. I wouldn't say he's a Marxist means, is he a Marxist? No. Because after all, he's already told us that whether or not Barack Obama is a Marxist is a good question. When we all know that it's a BS red baiting question. Right? Yeah. Is he a Marxist? Well, I'd hesitate to say he's a Marxist. But that means much of, you know, well, it really is. It's the same thing as what Bill O'Reilly said, isn't it? Remember back when Bill O'Reilly was calling for the murder of Michelle Obama, and he said, I don't want to get a lynching party together unless that's how she really feels. In other words, if she really feels that way, I'd be willing to murder her. Yeah, this is the same thing. This is Joe Lieberman saying he'd hesitate to call him a Marxist. But hesitation is not refusal. Just to finish it up.
Far to the left of me, and I think mainstream America, and I did think this whatever, whether you call it elitist or whatever, this comment he made in San Francisco was a real mistake.
Yeah, Joe, because you frankly don't give a tinker's damn what happens to small-town America as long as you can get out there and see if you can't get you some Arabs killed. Because you, Joe Lieberman, are a chicken hawk. You don't want to leave Iraq because you like the fact that we're killing Arabs, because you're a racist, Joe Lieberman. See, I won't hesitate to say you're a racist, Joe Lieberman. I'll say it straight out. You're a racist, Joe Lieberman. You're no good. You could put a steaming pile of in a seat next to him in the Senate, and the steaming pile would be every bit as high quality a senator as Joe Lieberman is, okay? That's just, yeah. You know, that's the nice thing. In the political world, they have to talk, and they have to mince their words, and they have to back up from the, oh, I didn't mean it that way. You know what? I mean that. I mean there is no difference between Joe Lieberman and a steaming pile of dung in a seat next to him. And in fact, once in a while, the steaming pile of dung, by simply not saying anything, might be more likely to get it right than Joe Lieberman. And I mean that with all my heart. Now you got to turn your monitor down if you're gonna cyberstalk. That's our radio cyberstalker. Joe Lieberman. Well, I must say that's a good question. You know, what kind of human scum are you when you respond to a red baiting question by answering, that's a good question? What kind of dishonest, miserable piece of garbage are you if you will offer validation to Judge Napolitano's red smear? What does Judge Napolitano think? That Senator Obama wants to set up some sort of proletariat of the masses? I don't buy that at all. Oh, maybe he wants to feed poor people. That's communist. Oy. And then, of course, you know, Hillary's out there with the whole business about, you know, she's got her guns and she's a real gun gal and brother. That's where we are. Oh, by the way, for those of you keeping a score at home, the problem is John McCain! Not Hillary Clinton and not Barack Obama. The problem is John McCain and his enablers like Joe Lieberman. I mean, you know, just as a public service, just to let you know, I mean, in case you were forgetting. Because we tend to have this, you know, attention deficit disorder thing going on with regard to this election. John, it's funny. Senator Clinton came out swinging. Oh, he's an elitist. And, you know, poor little John McCain's over there going, yeah, he's an elitist. Bless their hearts, the Obama campaign came out and said, and if John McCain wants a debate about who's out of touch with the American people, we can start by talking about the tax breaks for the wealthiest Americans that he once said offended his conscience, but now wants to make permanent. That's a little bit sort of not as direct as I would like, but I guess you really can't expect political presidential candidates to be out there saying, you know, hey! Bomber John! Nah, this! Quick little piece of email before the top of the hour break. Joe versus steaming dung. And as an added benefit, a steaming pile of dung will eventually help somebody grow some nice tomatoes or something. See? I told you. Joe Lieberman is worse than a steaming pile of dung. But you already knew that. So we'll be back in a couple of minutes after a little musical interlude. This is America's liberal voice. This is the horn. We'll be right back.
We'll be right back. It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Yes, indeedy. Hour number two. Monday evening, off and running. And just a little update for you, in case you were wondering. Really hoping I wouldn't have to do any more talking about this, but I kind of do. We jumped right out of the blocks for the first week of April on our monthly fundraising drive. Second week of April wasn't so good to it. You who did try, God knows, we sincerely appreciate it. But we're still trying to get to $700. Remember, we are in a deep, deep hole. If you have the ability and you have never contributed to help keep Conversation Radio on the air, I encourage you to do so. There's a PayPal button at the website. All you got to do is use it. And if you need the mailing address, it's somewhere on the website, too. And, I'll give it to you as well. 1038 North Eisenhower Drive. That's head on. 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, West Virginia, 25801. Okay, it's just, we'll be here as long as you're there. That's about the long and the short of it. Now, back to the problem at hand. And just to remind you, the problem at hand is not Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton. The problem at hand is a guy who used to fly a very expensive military jet over Vietnam and drop bombs on poor people and peasants, because that's what he was told to do, and he was going to follow his orders, even if they were war crimes. Sure thing, you betcha. John McCain is the problem. Now, it would be nice. I don't know. Maybe she already has. Somebody can send it to me if she has, and I'm really, really open to seeing this. I really would like to see this. You want to talk about elitism? I got some elitism for you here. I mean, this is no doubt about it, elitism. This is looking down your nose at struggling America. And it doesn't come from Barack Obama, Senator Clinton. It comes from John McCain. Sure would like to see a press release about this come from both camps, both the Obama campaign and from the Clinton campaign, about this. This is like that children's game. Where on earth is Carmen Sandiego? Where in the universe is John McCain?
Straight talk here. Are we in a recession?
I certainly think so, but let me just add to that.
Wait, okay, he's in trouble. A little, God, and these interviewers do his work for him. Did you hear the cutesy reporter, the moderator asking the question? Let's start this from the beginning.
Senator, little straight talk here. Are we in a recession?
I certainly think so, but let me just add to that comment.
But he is in trouble. He knows he just stepped in it with his masters in the White House and the Bush administration and the Republican National Committee. Are we... A little straight talk here. Are we in a recession? I certainly... We were sailing along on moonlight. Stutter a little more, John. I think so. But so, let's pick up with the buts.
American, it's really kind of a technical term used by people in that who are economists and make these kinds of judgments. The important factor here is that Americans are hurting.
Ah, okay. So, a recession is only a technical term, but the important thing is that Americans are hurting. Well, John, buddy, I'm going to say this really slowly, because, John, we understand that you were 894th out of your graduating class of 899. So we know that you aren't very bright. John, people are hurting because it is a recession. And John, that matters. Of course, only, let's see, April, March, only 3 months ago, Bomber John said, I don't believe we're headed into a recession. I believe the fundamentals of this economy are strong, and I believe they will remain strong. John, why don't you explain it to all us dummies out here how it was you came to flip-flop on whether we're in economic trouble? Don't worry. He'll get a memo from the White House telling him to stop this recession talk, and in a matter of days we'll be back to not being in a recession again. Because John McCain cannot think for himself. Now, he can talk for himself, he can babble for himself, he can open his mouth and stick his own foot in his mouth by himself. And what's really fun is after he stuck his foot in his mouth, seeing how he's going to get the other one in there with it. But he cannot think by himself. Not that you would expect someone who graduated 894th in a class of 899 to be able to think for himself. That's why, unlike his grandfather and his father before him, John McCain was never able to make admiral. He could have made admiral on a legacy status. That's how dumb John McCain is. But recession is really a kind of a technical term used by people who are economists and stuff and make these kinds of judgment. Then again, John, you may have a point. What matters is that people are hurting. And that is what matters, John. The only problem is that you and your party and the people who think like you would just as soon continue the agony for the people who are already in agony. You, John McCain, are the problem. You're not part of the solution. You can never be part of the solution. You are the problem. You and your tax cuts for the rich are the problem. You and your "we need to teach creationism as an alternative to evolution" crowd are the problem. You want to talk about the foreign threats to the United States? Your warmongering, John, makes for foreign threats to the United States. And by the way, oh, I said remind me, and I just reminded myself. You know, Ed Schultz, you know, I guess there are people out there that like him. I personally would just as soon listen to the bubbles dissipate in greasy dishwater, but you know, this is still worth mentioning. He referred to John McCain as a warmonger. And John McCain's campaign called on Barack Obama's campaign to denounce Ed Schultz for calling John McCain a warmonger. Now, granted, I don't operate in the rarefied atmosphere of Ed the Mushroom Head Schultz. And I don't have a huge, well-paid staff. We've got the finest news ninjas and moderators and blog operators and blog posters of any network in the country. They're just not well paid. But under any set of circumstances, I can't imagine anybody's campaign being able to pick up the phone and call one of the ninjas or one of the bloggers or one of the moderators and say, hey, get a message to Bob for me, would you? Tell him to call John McCain a warmonger. And then I did. And then the McCain campaign got its maiden forms in a bunch. And called on Obama to repudiate it. You see what I'm saying? The Repiglicans are so pissy. That they call on people who are wholly unrelated to other people to repudiate an independent speaker's remarks. Boy, I sure wish John McCain's campaign would call on me to repudiate calling him a warmonger. 'Cause I would. I'm sorry, John. Didn't mean to piss you off there, buddy. You're not a warmonger. You're a war criminal! A 40,000-foot-high war criminal. You're also an incompetent John McCain. Anybody who cares to read the history of the Forrestal Fire can know what I'm talking about. And the Obama campaign, to its discredit, put distance between itself and Ed the Mushroom Head Schultz's comment that John McCain is a warmonger. My question is why? Why? Can we not tell the truth in unvarnished terms in the United States anymore? I actually went and looked up warmonger. And I was okay with the definition. Let me see if I can find it again here. Yeah, there it is, warmonger definition. A militarist, a person who advocates war or warlike policies. Let's see. Let's try another version here. One who advocates or attempts to stir up war. One who advocates or attempts to stir up war. All right. Let's see what the Merriam-Webster Online Dictionary has to say about it. One who urges or attempts to stir up war. Well, how in the sweet name of heaven is John McCain not a warmonger? I mean, I'm just asking. This man says that even though the Iraqi people don't want us there anymore, have repeatedly stated that they don't want us there anymore, even their own Prime Minister Maliki says he don't want us there anymore, John McCain wants to stay and urge or stir up war. That is being a warmonger. A fishmonger is someone who tries to get people to buy fish. A warmonger is someone who tries to get people to buy war. Now, have I just not got this right? Am I missing something here? Why did Barack Obama have to apologize for Ed the Mushroom Head Schultz calling John McCain a warmonger? I mean, that's just that kind of like the jitterbug. It plumb evades me. For the life of me, I don't know why it would be the Obama campaign's responsibility to distance itself from a comment that was not made by someone in the Obama campaign. I mean, I'm, you know, just a little astonished with all of this. Welcome to the program.
Hello?
Hello.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing well.
Well, I just got just a piece of what you're talking about. I kind of wanted to reiterate on what you were talking about. This is B-Rez, by the way.
Hey, B, what's up?
I was curious of what exact you're talking about just now about the Obama situation.
Well, just simply that the business of calling on campaigns to apologize for things that they didn't say. You know, for instance, so-called liberal talker, but he's not really, Ed Schultz calls John McCain a warmonger, and the McCain campaign tells the Obama campaign to apologize for it. And they do.
And he didn't even say it.
And he didn't say it. Ed Schultz said it.
Well, did they apologize?
Sure they did. They put out a statement saying, Senator Obama does not believe that John McCain is a warmonger.
I think that basically that would come from Mr. Obama completely trying to keep the campaign as positive as he can. You know, and of course it's not his place to apologize for something that someone else said.
And that's the answer. If I said he was a warmonger, and I felt like I had misspoken, I'd apologize for it. But you need to take that up with Ed the Mushroom Head Schultz. Well, that's the answer.
Completely. I completely agree with you. I completely understand what you're saying. But I think in Obama's defense on why he would apologize for that would be just because he's trying, you know, there's so many different ways that they can dirty him that he wants to make sure that he doesn't dirty anybody, I think.
Well, then it's going to be a long road to November, B.
I understand that. And
because they're going to come at him with knives and grenades and bombs and, you know, everything. They're going to throw they're going to come at him with the racist filth, and they've already started it.
I think that there's
and if he's
more
if he's
that they're going to come at him with. Have you heard the YouTube video?
Which one?
The YouTube video with the guy who says that he hung out with Barack Obama.
Oh God, yeah, that was discredited. Yeah, that got discredited a long time back.
Okay, well, I was worried about it because I was sitting there thinking, you know, the reason they haven't given any press to it. It's so that they can wait till he gets the nomination and then blow that up.
No, because see, anybody who watches that video and sees that dude realizes that he's crazy, and even a couple of journalists went so far as to find out that he was crazy.
Right.
I mean, wasn't even in the same city with Obama on the date that he was making the allegations. But and it didn't get a whole lot of traction. But if he's the thing is, if we're back,
that was a Republican ploy.
Nah, that's just a crazy dude.
Just a crazy dude. You don't think it was a Republican ploy at all?
No. Or it may have been a real low rent, low grade, low level Republican ploy.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess I'm just a believer that everything that's crappy is responsible by the.
Well, you know, that's not a bad way to approach things.
Right.
I mean, evil people do evil things, and Republicans are evil. Therefore, Republicans do evil things.
That's right. That's 100% true. Well, basically, Bob, I just called to say hi and let you know you're doing an amazing job at speaking the good word, and just to let you know to give me a call when you get off air, okay?
I'll do my dead level best. I sure enough will.
I appreciate it, man, and I appreciate what you're doing for the world.
All right, thanks,
like
B.
Always.
All right,
like always. I'll talk to you later.
Take it easy. Bye now. Now, seriously. And this is very important. If Senator Obama is backing up already and backing down and apologizing for stuff that he's not even responsible for, that scares me. Because they're going to fling it so fast and so hard and so filthy and so dirty. That he'll be so busy apologizing that he won't have a chance to get his own message out. See, that's the reason I did use, I think the term Rovian finally does apply to this business with the elitism remarks and all of that garbage. Because Karl Rove's first tenet has always been, if you're explaining, you're losing. Write that down somewhere. It's a quote from Karl Rove. If you're explaining, you're losing. And what has Senator Obama been forced to do for the last 4 days, 3 days, 4 days, but explain what he meant with the comments about small town America? Now let me just give you an example of perhaps another way to respond to it. Rather than backing up, when the question is put, you know, why are you talking all, you know, why are you being an elitist? You respond by saying, why aren't you as angry as I am for what's been done to middle America? Why aren't you as disgusted as I am with what's been done to middle America? Make the other side do the explaining. But once again, we have a tete-a-tete, a set-to, a disagreement between two Democratic candidates about stuff that's been done to Americans, mostly by Republicans. It would be a lot easier for me to make my decision on who I'm going to vote for in May if I could simply gauge who is more willing to wear the hell out of John McCain between now and the convention. That's what I've got to see. I've got to see who is capable of beating John McCain. Because as much as I would like to have Dennis Kucinich in the White House or John Edwards, it appears that I'm not going to get him. As much as I would welcome Al Gore to the White House, much more than either of these two candidates, I'm not going to get him. So I've got to find out, and I think we've got to find out, who is going to fight back harder? Not against the other Democrat, but against John McCain. And it's proving rather a frustrating task as far as I'm concerned. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, how you doing, man? It's Gary.
Hey, Gary, what's going on, man?
Hey, not much. I was just listening to what you were talking about earlier. I think you said something right at the beginning that was just, like, perfect that I was home this weekend, obviously doing these taxes and things, and I was just watching, you know, I had the news in the background, this stupid
I hate it. I hate it.
It's a dumb story. But you said, when you said something that was interesting, was the whole thing about this man, he can't have this, the whole pity concept.
That hit me.
Very interesting take.
Gary, that hit me like a ton of bricks. It hit me yesterday. And I think it's correct.
I think it's correct. I think you hit it. All these pundits talk about all this other stuff. All I have to do is come on Hit On Radio, and I can get right to the crust of it. You hit it right on the head, brother. And I'll try to send you some more money this week. You know.
I understand, man. I understand.
I think you guys out last week. I think I sent.
Yeah, you did, and we appreciate it so very, very much. We sincerely do.
Really, all I can do right now.
Oh, look, I know. I know. And you know what? I feel creepy talking about this stuff, talking about the money issue, knowing what's happening to America right now. I feel like under the circumstances, we're probably lucky to be on the air at all. So, you know, we're grateful for everything. But, you know, if you've got a copy of To Kill a Mockingbird laying around, or you can get your hands on one, Atticus gives a speech. I think it's in his closing argument in the Tom Robinson trial, where he explains that his sin was to have pity on a white woman.
Yeah, I read that book years ago, and I remember it wasn't really a big book, if I remember correctly.
No, it's not very long at all.
Yeah, I did read that. That's probably when I was in college. So, yeah, I did read it. But, yeah, man, you hit it. I have to go back and revisit that, because you hit it right on the head. I mean, it's like, wow. Because I was sitting there thinking, I said, this whole elite thing, I just know it being, you know, as a black person, that you never really ever, and especially when I was traveling down to South America, even though, you know, I might have been traveling with people who had some money, you know, those areas down there, just being of a certain skin color, people didn't put me on the same level as people I was with.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's always going to be the same. I think it's always going to be hard to take an African American. Because I think when you go anywhere, any place, everybody kind of thinks that you're not necessarily of the elite class. I mean, that's
yeah.
Common sense.
Well, if you're coming from America, there are certain assumptions that are made. I don't think those same assumptions are made about a person of African descent in Europe who grew up in Europe. You know what I'm saying? But if you're coming from the United States, there are stereotypes, and they're stereotypes for a reason. But
it's interesting to see how they paint, because I think you probably could paint, like you said, the whole pity thing. Yeah, that's not a good angle. If that was to take hold against him, that would not be a good thing for him.
But they couldn't use the word pity, Gary, because, you know, even Washington pundits would have picked up on it then. So instead, they have to use the word elitist. And what is elitist except an elitist's word for uppity? Right?
Yep.
I mean, does that go from A to B to C for you?
Yep.
Oh Lord, it's nasty. You know, because after all, I mean, this is not the Obama campaign headquarters or the Clinton campaign headquarters, but the fact of the matter is, nobody gave Barack Obama anything. Last I checked, he was the child of a single parent for all intents and purposes. And he had to work his way through his undergraduate, and his work in undergraduate school got him into Harvard Law, didn't it? I mean, do I have it right?
Yeah, he could play that angle up a little more. And I mean, there's some stuff he can do. Say, look, you know, I had to work my way through and really go through how his family was in debt, like just about 2 or 3 years ago. I mean, he can work that stuff up.
Yeah, what they paid off. He and Michelle paid their student loans off
2 or 3 years ago.
Yeah. They just recently got the student loan secret police off their backs.
Yeah.
Because, you know, those guys will not let you miss a payment. You're meat if you do. And frankly, if I recall correctly, if you calculate Obama's age, he paid it off almost right on time. So it's not like anybody was out there making his payments for him.
Yeah, I think, like I said, I think just like the Reverend Wright thing, I think this too shall pass. I mean, it may have some sticking points for a little while, may drag the primary out for a while, but I think in the end, I think it's going to still come down to, I just think the conditions in this country is still going to come down to issues. And I think, I don't know about the general election, I, you know, I,
even McCain, because McCain actually is trying to run on change. He's trying to say, you know, I'm not the typical Republican. I'm that maverick. That really is his angle.
Yeah, but you know, Gary, a maverick Republican's like a maverick rattlesnake.
I know that. That's what me and you think. But I'm saying the general public is, he's going to separate himself from Bush. That's what he's trying to go back and be John McCain in 2000. And what we need to make sure we paint him as John McCain now, because that's who you're going to get going to the White House. Not that so-called maverick, even though I agree with you. You know what I'm saying? He's trying to go back and reclaim that 2000 thing that he kind of had going.
But even in 2000, again, there was no there.
Yeah, there's no there. He still was tied in the lobbyists. His whole life is tied to lobbyists and Keating and all those guys. I mean, that's who he is. But the media is going to give him a pass. I'm going to tell you why.
The media gave him donuts on TV. I'm not kidding.
Well, you know,
did you see that?
Yeah. But did you see the skit where they did, like, on Saturday Night Live, where they asked Obama for a pillow?
Yeah.
You ever see that?
Yeah.
Well, I think they're giving McCain a bed with a masseuse. You know what I mean? I mean, it's like they're giving this guy the pass of all passes. It's really amazing, actually. You know, it's just like they're just in love with him. You know, like, you know, I don't know. I'll take it back. I don't know if it's in love. It's just like, you know, I kind of think about this all along. You know, it's like I remember when after New Hampshire, and you know, my first candidate was considered like, you know, any smart person, and then it was John Edwards, because I think he was coming from the whole point of what I believe is the main issue is just total greed in this country. Now, that being said, after New Hampshire, Hillary Clinton was in third place. They didn't want to talk about John Edwards at all. They just pushed him to the side. They were driving this story of Obama and Hillary Clinton all along. That's just how it was, and it's just really kind of starting to get sickening.
Yeah, it was the WWF steel cage death match from the get go.
Yeah, I can see it. You know, and a lot of people don't look at it sometimes that way. But I was telling somebody at desk, look at this. I mean, whenever there's like a slow cycle, they bring up some stuff because the news networks do not want this thing to go away. Obama versus McCain, to them probably is not a good narrative. Or Clinton against, whatever. McCain is not a good narrative to them. Right now, they love the death match that they got. And they want this thing to go to the convention. And I think they're going to try to do everything they can to keep this thing going.
Well, you know, you talk about what the media do not want to do. You're so very right, Gary, because among other things, you know, to me, when that story hit last week that Bush's cabinet had sat in the White House and actively discussed which tortures they were going to allow and which ones wouldn't be allowed, and the list of the ones that they wouldn't allow was much shorter than the ones that they would, I thought, holy cow, that's real news, man. And then it comes out where George says, yep, I knew about it. I approved it.
Not even on. See that, and you know what? The real enemy. I was thinking about what you're saying. I'm just trying to say right now, even though long term it is the Republican, the media is our enemy right now.
Yeah, boy. Absolutely, no doubt about it.
Because I'm an Obama supporter, but I'm not foolish enough to say that early on the media clearly was biased toward Hillary Clinton. I mean, there's no way you can just. But I don't care how pro whatever you are. They clearly, especially MSNBC, they just don't like her. But then I keep saying to people that don't worry, Obama's going to get his too, because they're trying to drive this narrative. Bring her down at a certain point, you know, and get everything even Steven, and then, you know, tear him down. I mean, that's to me kind of like, when I watch this whole thing kind of going on, it seems like that's what's really kind of happening. It's almost like they're working lockstep, because you're right. Why wouldn't they be talking about this torture thing? I mean, this is war crimes.
Well, Dan Frumkin in the Washington Post this morning mentioned that the fact that Bush's admission that he knew about it and approved of it did not get a mention in the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, or the L.A. Times, and there was nothing on CNN, CBS, or NBC about it. What does that tell you? Now, on the other hand, if they didn't have the Hillary versus Obama steel cage death match to, you know, as soon as one starts creeping up, they'll drive him down, and then if she starts creeping up, they'll step on her to raise him up. If they don't have all of that going on, then they might actually have to report on stuff like torture. And they sure don't want to do that.
Yeah, but vanity is going to get the best of everything, because there's no way Hillary's going to step down and say, hey, okay, you just go ahead and I'll support you. And there's no way, obviously, Obama's going to step down and say, okay, Hillary, I'll support you. And I'll run, you know, 8 years, and I'm a young guy. It's not going to happen because it's all about vanity at this point, and, you know, whatever. But because that's ultimately, to me, the way to save this country. We have to have some kind of united front, because the one thing I've always wished I could do, because, you know, my little travels, you know, I went to school down south, so I used to drive through those little crickety towns.
Mm-hmm.
And so I know a little bit of, I don't pretend to know as much as you about small towns, but I know some of that kind of culture and things that they like and believe in. And I've also lived in the urban, you know, urban cities for a while, New York and New Jersey. And the one thing I can tell you, that the guy that I used to see on the corner, whether it be the drug boy, the guns or whatever, the same guy I used to see out in some of the small towns, kind of like, doesn't have a job, trying to make some kind of economic situation out of his situation. You know, he's totally not involved in any kind of politics, and just totally like a sense of helplessness. Jobs are gone in those inner city neighborhoods in Baltimore area, you know, up here. It's the same thing. If you can bring those two people together, those two guys and women, and bring them together and say, you know what, we all got the same issue. Let's be a united front. I think that's when America will probably fulfill its destiny. As long as the Republicans, media is going to continue to separate us on this class issue, and then they throw the race and the immigrant stuff in there. You know, it's going to be a hard thing. I'm hoping that this is an opening, that this discussion will come out of this, you know, that maybe somehow Barack or some people really will try to talk about this in a, you know, the way you were talking about it, but I don't hold much hope.
I don't... Well, you know, I'd love to know what the genesis of this story is, Gary. I mean, to the extent that, you know, somebody called the McCain campaign and said, Ed Schultz said John's a warmonger and all of that stuff, you know, that's sort of, you know, that's like the old children's game of telephone. Did somebody in Pennsylvania get wind of this and tell the Clinton campaign, boy, I sure am insulted that all these sure is an elitist? Did somebody do that? I don't believe they did that.
Well, I do know that from what I've heard today from some people, you know, some down here in the D.C. area, so it's a political town, that the person who posted the information on the website, she tried to shoot kind of like not a Hillary supporter or not even a Barack Obama supporter, but now they're saying that they found out that she donated to Fred Thompson. This thing where he was at was a closed function. It was just really to his, like, troops, basically to people who support him. So I guess what this person did, gave money and got access to it. But now it's coming out that, no, she's not. And I've noticed that a couple of her postings on Huffington Post that I've read, I've kind of noticed they seem to be kind of like a hit job on any Democrat. She kind of like, guys, no, I'm a Democrat. But then it's like, but she's very critical of the Democrats. But I'm kind of like now kind of wondering. I think we got a couple of moles. Obviously.
Well, do rednecks like me and, you know, poor folks and middle-class folks and people in small-town America, do we have the right, Gary, to get a little bit pissed off when people are running around speaking for us and it wasn't us speaking up in the first place? And I'm not talking about Obama. I'm talking about whoever it was that decided what Obama said was elitist. I mean, if an elitist says something is elitist, isn't that sort of like multiplying negatives and you get a positive? You see what I'm saying?
Yeah. I think what you were saying earlier about Obama coming to the thing is correct. I think that's a perception. I will say this in his defense, because like I said, I support him and I've watched his campaign. There's plenty of YouTube videos of him in Iowa and small towns saying the exact same thing. So he's actually gone to these small towns. What he said really wasn't different. The problem with what he said, it was a little unworded than the way he usually says it. And he was in San Francisco. That's why I said that I think this really was a big hit job, because there's enough stuff on YouTube out there that you can find of him saying the exact same thing to voters. So why didn't they say, oh, wait, he said it.
There's one word that set off all the bells and whistles, Gary.
Yeah.
Religion.
Religion. No, you shouldn't have said religion.
If, honest to goodness, if he had said they cling to things like fundamentalism, It would have been a lot harder to attack.
Do you think, in the context of what he said, do you think it's true? What he said?
Yes, I do. I think his actual words are 100% unmitigated gospel. And they are not, but they're not gospel because they're applied to people in small town America. They're gospel because they apply to human beings in any condition. When people are scared, when people are uncertain about their future, when people don't know how they're going to feed their kids, when their kids don't have health care, when they themselves don't have health care, when they're working three jobs and they are still behind, they will reach out and they will cling to stuff. What he was doing was really, like I said, a thesis on right-wing radio. The Limbaughs and the Hannitys and the Coulters and the O'Reillys and the Savages have all spent 20 years telling the same people that Obama is talking about that the problem, because, you know, Obama went on and said, or they cling to, oh, what is it? I got it right here. He said, antipathy to people who aren't like them, or anti-immigrant sentiment, or anti-trade sentiment as a way to explain their frustrations. What he was talking about was metaphoric thinking. Now, if you stood on a podium and addressed a people at a political rally and said metaphoric thinking, well, your campaign's already gone because, you know, you can't talk like that in America. But, he was identifying the metaphors that people use, and yes, it is if a religion will tell you, you know, when you've got nothing left, if there's a religion that will tell you you get pie in the sky when you die, then you'll cling to it. If you've had everything taken away from you but your guns, you hang on to your guns twice as hard. If your job disappeared to Kuala Lumpur, then you might have a little bit of antipathy toward people there.
So now you're mad at Barack Obama, the guy who didn't send a good job. Now you're mad at the Democrats, the people who
right.
Don't.
And you're going to get mad at the guy who tells you the truth?
it's like we went into Iraq and we totally displaced all those people. They lost their jobs and everything else. And now what are they clinging to? Religion and guns. You know, it's called insurgency. I mean, yeah, of course. It's a tried and true, kind of like rat-in-a-box field study. I mean, that's all it is. I mean, you put people in desperate situations.
Me and Bobby McGee, that great song, with that, freedom's just another word for nothing left to lose.
Exactly. I mean, it's just really, you know, it's kind of a, you know, it is. This is a sad state of affairs that, you know, it's like, you know, another side I was going to say on this, Bob, is that, you know, it's getting so much now with the rhetoric. You know, I was saying the whole thing about Randy Rhoads and everything. And I was like, okay, look, I know that there's a lot of back and forth between people, but now what I'm noticing, you see it even in the media, like, there's just like Lou Dobbs. I mean, now he's going off the deep end. Not to say he hasn't gone off the deep end, but his pro-war kind of side is really starting to show, even though he's highly critical of administration. And, you know, because he's not talking about anything about John McCain, he'll criticize him a little bit, but I noticed lately he's been backing off on him. You know, he's really attacking just Barack and Hillary, and it's really kind of. And you look at Keith Olbermann; he's very pro-Obama. You know, you can look at almost any show and just see who's pro-Hillary, pro-Obama. And you're supposed to be a news organization; it's too editorialized. I mean, we just need some just even-handed reporting, and we're just not getting that. Everybody has a damn agenda now. Everybody. And it seems to me the agenda just get lost is the agenda of the American people. You know, it's like it's all ego now. Everything's ego. You know,
it is.
Lou Dobbs is mad because Obama called him out on the immigrant thing. You know, so he just rails on him forever. You know, it's crazy.
And, you know, Lou Dobbs was part of the problem in the first place because Lou Dobbs was vociferously anti-Gore, and Lou Dobbs was vociferously anti-Kerry.
And he was very pro to the Iraq War.
Yeah. And now he wants...
off of that now, but he was. I remember watching it.
Yeah, and now he wants to complain about where did all the American jobs go? Well, you know, Lou Dobbs, all the American jobs went where you wanted all the American jobs to go.
Well, now he's talking about running independent, but he was a Republican for so long. He kind of said he has this awakening. Well, you know what? I mean, nothing. You know, I'm not the smartest guy in the world. But, you know, even when, you know, back in the 80s, I saw, you know, that the Democratic Party had a better value. To me, it wasn't really a question or common sense. So I just kind of have a problem with Republicans who are now having this sudden awakening. I think that what's happened is that they finally are being affected themselves. You know, I didn't have to wait till it starts affecting me. I could see other people hurting and say, you know what? I see other people hurting, and I hear the crowd report, and I want to help them. Now, I'm not going to wait till that water gets to my shore. And that's really the problem with a lot of Republicans. They just, like, until it happens to them.
It isn't real.
It ain't real, exactly. They don't feel the pain of the people out there in West Virginia. They don't care. Coal, whatever.
Yeah, John McCain, don't tell me about you knowing that people are hurting, and therefore it doesn't matter if you call it a recession or not. You're married to a beer heiress. You know, it's bad enough he's rich, but he's got free beer and he's rich. That's just too much, Gary. You know what? He doesn't know anything. It's like that business about reporters being taken to his cabin in the hills. I think that was discussed some on Mark Levine's show last week, and it turns out that John McCain's cabin in the hills is actually a mansion compound.
Well, the thing is, like, they always come with this cowboy kind of illusionist image. You know, it's like my father, who loves to look at, like, you know how older men are. They kind of like to watch Western. They're like, I don't care who they are, black, white, or they love watching Western.
Oh man, yeah.
Love Western. Sit there, my father. He can sit all day and watch Western. Same shows over and over and over. And it's always this kind of this illusion of this great way. You know, to me, it's always that kind of thing of this great way, but that's fine, this cowboy image, but the fact of the matter is, you know, it's an illusion.
It never existed in the first place.
Yeah.
It was a brutish life, and as many died as succeeded. Yeah, I can remember back when my dad was still with us. If he had the clicker in his hand and there was anything riding a horse, you know, TV stopped right there. And I know exactly what you're talking about. But it's one of those mythic things, Gary, where people, we have a yearning to believe that there was a time that's better than the time we are in. And every culture's done that from ours to the first one. You know, when the first farming cultures came up, you know, the old guys sat around and said, you know, it was a lot better when we were hunting and gathering. Because the present's never as much fun. Because the present is what it is, but you can remake the past in your own mind.
But, you know, as our last conversation we had, you know, one thing I was, you know, going back to what we was talking about is that even with this illusion of all this other kind of stuff, and, you know, and I'd like to know what you think of this. The one thing I went out this morning and did grab some gas, and, you know, I always told somebody, I said, you know, you can talk about everything else, but it's something about gas price that just changes the thing politically. When there's some bad gas, like, people just all of a sudden have this miracle awakening politically. They automatically didn't know what they need to do in terms of the vote. You know, it's almost like, I've always seen this, whether, you know, it's just to me, at least I hear the conversation starts to change about Washington. It's like, we really got to do something about Washington. Outside of that, they don't have any interest. As soon as gas prices go up, and I'm looking at this thing and I'm saying, you know, man, people are hurting. And I'm thinking, do you really think the McCain illusion, the myth thing that they're going to bring up, this war hero and all this other kind of stuff, is really going to stick when people lose their houses? You know what I'm saying? The economic, do you think people are going to want to hear about his damn biography? I don't want to hear about his biography. I want to know what is he going to do for us. I want to get some sense that he's in touch with me. Now, do you think they're actually going to be able to sell that illusion again? Are the Republicans going to be able to do that? Mainly to white males. That's probably what they're going to try to, you know, make them most hate.
It's a little bit easier it's a little bit easier for the Republicans to do that, Gary, because either way, whether it's Clinton or Obama, they can tap into white male resentment either of a woman in a position of power or a black man in a position of power. And so it'll make the job of McCain a little bit easier, frankly. Plus, they get the added benefit of bringing out of appealing to the real hardcore misogynists or racists in the country. And you know, in elections that are decided by 2 or 3 percentage points, I'd say that the electorate probably has 2 or 3 percentage points in it that are hardcore woman or African-American haters, racists or misogynists. I mean, do you think it's that much of a stretch to say that 3% of the American electorate is biased in one of those two directions?
Yeah, I agree with you, Hunter. I think that's the classic formula. The only thing I would say to that, and why I guess I'm a little bit more hopeful this time around, is that, you know, I guess because I've been to, you know, to a rally or two of his, and I see that even probably going into it, this situation, he's going to, because just his dynamics or whatever, like people like call rock star, the groupies, whoever that you want to call him, he seems to be able to push up this registration because the Democrats are registering just god-awful amounts of people. I mean, it's just like in Pennsylvania, it's just record people are just coming in and signing up. And some of that is because obviously a woman's running, but I think a lot of it is Obama. And I also think there is going to be, you know, I tell people this, and I believe this kind of, I think you're going to have a certain group of whites who are going to vote for Obama because they feel some white guilt. I don't know. Now, I feel if they say that there's going to be more, what you said earlier, more people who are going to probably not want to vote for African-American.
And the I'm just saying
I think there'll be an offset to that.
I think there is, too. But I think the real trick also is to take the people who have registered. There are newly registered voters who were positively registered, and there are newly registered voters who were negatively registered.
Yeah.
There are people who registered to vote against someone, and there are people who registered to vote for someone.
That's true.
The kick is going to be getting the answer to the question once the nomination is in hand for one of these two people. Making sure that you get them, because you can't just get them to the polls once. You got to get them to the polls twice, and it's that second one that is going to be the defining moment.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm saying if you have all these people come out just to the primary. I mean, I used to vote, obviously voted for years. You know, see people come out primary, and if the economy is going to be bad probably around September, I'll go back to my theory. I can't say there's going to be a landslide. You know, I think that. I really think McCain's age is really going to be something that is going to be really the deciding factor. I've always kind of felt that way. Beyond all the race in the world, whether it be a woman, I think his age, and I actually believe he's starting to show some signs of it. I mean, he's like taking off weekends. He can't really campaign. He's a very energetic guy. But I think somewhere down the line, I just had this gut feeling, which ain't good to go on gut feeling, but I just had this gut feeling that the age is what's going to probably tip the scales to the Democrat with him. And also, I think the money, I don't think he'll be able to raise the type of money the Democrats are going to raise. And that money does make a difference. People say it doesn't. No, it makes some difference. You know, you get people to, you know, you can go out and knock on some doors and make flyers and do ads and stuff. So it motivates people to normally wouldn't be motivated. They can figure, hey, I'll get paid to drive a van somewhere, you know. So we'll see.
Yeah. Well, there is some indication, Gary, that it's not really, that this whole business of attacking him and calling him an elitist is not playing in Pennsylvania, because Senator Clinton got roundly jeered for trying to bring it up again in an address in Pittsburgh today.
People are hurting, man. People get real smart when they hurt. I mean, that's...
They get focused is what they get.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, they get really, really focused. I mean, I guess my thing, I just really want, you know, I had this other side of me that always like, you know, that America is about to face Judgment Day. I mean, I felt that way about the last election. It's just like, I just can't get my mind around why George Bush is still in office. And you know, Bobby, just like sometimes I sit down, you ever think like you're in bizarro world?
It's everything I can do before the first cup of coffee to convince myself that I'm not, Gary.
I mean, no, I'm serious. Like, I know what you're saying, but I'm saying sometimes they really just step back from it and look at this whole theater that's going on.
Yeah, but no, I get what you're saying, because if you sit there and you say, okay, I'm going to build the time machine now, and I'm going to bring James Madison, Thomas Jefferson, Ben Franklin, George, I'm going to bring them all forward, and I'm going to show them what George Bush has done, and they're going to look at me and go, what's wrong with you people? Why didn't you impeach him 3 years ago? And yeah, it is bizarro world. Why is this man still in office?
Follow up on the war, prior to the war. Wouldn't even question it. Wouldn't question it when everybody knew that the people who attacked us were from Saudi Arabia. There was no linkage. But the media didn't do anything reporting.
70% of the American people believed at one time or another that Iraq had something to do with 9/11. The Bush administration did all of that. What's more, of that 70%, more than half, I think, were dedicated Fox viewers, if I recall the statistics correctly. You know, Roger Ailes and Rupert Murdoch don't have blood on their hands. Roger Ailes and Rupert Murdoch look like something from the last scene of Carrie. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But
I don't know, man. Sometimes I just can't understand. I mean, we're sitting here debating. We're talking about somebody who made a comment about Americans being bitter, which is true. I think people are pissed off at what we're talking about.
Maybe I'm a little more willing to tolerate that statement because I know I am bitter. I'm bitter. I'm PO'd. I'm disgusted. I'm scared. I'm uncertain. I'm all of those things that he was talking about.
I'm insecure, but but there's one last thing that I think we all are. That is determined. I mean, I am determined. I'm not going to sit back and let Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity and all these other people, you know, if I'm going to go out, then I'm going out swinging, because I'm not going to sit back. You know, I'm going to go out for the Democrats, whoever it is, and do what I can, you know, whether it's monetarily or just knock on doors or whatever, and just, you know, educate people. And I think one thing I'm going to start doing, you know, I've been kind of quiet about stuff. I've kind of held back, but not, you know, because, you know, I'm obviously Obama and I'm not really a Hillary supporter. But I kind of have come to the reasoning that, you know, after watching Randy Rose and other stuff, that we got to focus on McCain and Republicans. We got to start thinking about the end game at this point. And I hold my tongue with the Clintons. It's hard for me to do it. Don't get me wrong. They keep pushing me to the corner. I said I'm not going to do it because I said if I do that, I'm gonna start isolating the same voters. We probably gonna need, and I think that's what a lot of Democrats and I think the people with Hillary camp and Obama camp need to say. Look, you guys got to tone it down. Come to some consensus. Have a meeting. I mean, do something. But enough with like trying to portray each other as like the worst thing in the world for the presidency when you're not. Both of you would be good candidates because you got not so much you make different styles, Bob, but it's just that. It's just about the agenda. They got the same, basically, agenda.
Yeah.
So what's the point of fighting to the death? I don't understand.
The point of fighting to the death has nothing to do with you, me, or anybody else in this country. It has to do with what goes on in the soul of Barack Obama and the soul of Hillary Clinton. And those are two people, two highly motivated people, who want this worse than anything else on earth. And as a consequence of that, because as you say, you're correct, they are very similar on their positions. They've been reduced to making distinctions that have no differences. If one of Hillary Clinton's surrogates had said what Barack Obama said, she would be on the stump hollering, "Amen." And that's just the fact. I mean, I believe that sincerely. But because they are desperate to put separation between them, they have to create tempests in teapots.
And what's at stake? What do we lose if they tear each other down to the point where party?
To use a poker analogy, at this point, this country is all in, and if we lose the pot, we lose it all. I mean, the John McCain presidency is nothing but an unmitigated disaster for America that points the way toward the exit.
Exactly. Because the corporations and all the other people that John Edwards and everybody talked about will say, hey, man, we got another 4 years to, you know, like you said, to keep pillaging. It's like, you know, it's like the cops are coming, you know, and the crooks are in
yeah.
the treasury and they're taking stuff. And, you know, you can hear the sirens coming, but all of a sudden there's some roadblock or whatever, so they stay a little bit longer and they just take a look.
Yeah, now we can get the TV and the silver.
Damn right, man. We'll get the TV. Hell, get the ice cube tray. Everything. You know what I mean?
Yeah, we ain't leaving nothing. This is that scene with John McCain in the White House. It's that scene from The Grinch where he reaches down out of the chimney and takes the last little crumb from the mouse. You know, this is that exactly. Gary, thanks so much, my friend.
Good, man. We'll talk.
All right, you take it easy.
All right.
Bye now. Our buddy Gary calling from Maryland. And never mind the start of the next hour. Oh, rats. Okay.
Hey, Bob, it's Kevin.
Hey, Kevin, what's up?
Yeah, you know, Gary, I got to take my hat off to him and say, you know, probably I agree with him 110% on a lot of things, even though I'm not as optimistic as him. I agree more with you as far as Mid-America resenting the authority of a woman, a woman, and a black male.
Oh, I think it automatically gives John McCain at least 2 or 3 percentage points. It can't help but do that.
Exactly, and this is why he just came out of the middle of nowhere. As far as his election, which was bankrupt a few months back.
Yeah, he was dead in the water.
But I go back to what I said. I go back and I think of the Watergate. Follow the money. And as far as the media, how they're covering this election, who would you say is the biggest media outlet out there now?
Depends on how you want to define it.
As far as even wealth and capable of coverage.
I don't think it's any print medium. Frankly, mm-hmm. I think if you're gonna limit it to one entity,
yeah,
that's a tougher question. For me, it's a message. It's a matter of message, and in terms of getting the message out there, the ones who are winning the war are right-wing talk radio.
I would say NBC.
Okay. You mean by virtue of the combination between CNBC, MSNBC, and NBC itself?
Yes. And who owns...
Well, nobody's watching Katie Couric, so, you know, we can get rid of her.
Yeah, and... NBC now, who owns NBC?
GE.
And what is GE?
The world's largest defense contractor.
Okay, and what is McCain?
The world's largest defense whore.
Exactly. Follow the money.
Sure, yeah.
That's all I need to say. Now, you know, following the money, that's the cake, and the bigotry and the sexism and the misogynism, that's the icing on the cake. And that's why I said...
You know, it's interesting, it's interesting though, because, what was it, Friday the stock market went in the toilet over nothing much more, well, went in the toilet, went a little further down the toilet, I guess, over GE's profit numbers.
Oh, yeah, well... I can't believe they're not making a profit.
Well, that's accounting. You know, that's the kind of blue smoke and mirrors that corporations do. They barely make a profit after all their deductions are taken care of, and then what they do make, they barely pay any taxes on.
Yeah.
I mean, look, the best example I can think of that's very easy for me is these goons that I talk about a lot, and that's Massey Energy. These guys have not made a profit more. I think maybe once they've had two straight quarters of profit. This is the fourth largest coal company in America, and they can't turn a profit two quarters in a row, and yet their president and CEO salaries go up every year.
That's why they're not turning a profit.
You know, it's a dodge. Of course they're making money. They're making money hand over fist selling coal to China and whoever else will buy it. But that's the American corporate model. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Is to not show a profit because profits are where taxes happen.
Oh yeah.
On the other hand, though, I think we would be well advised, in terms of talking about, you know, who has the greatest impact. You can't overlook what right wing talk radio does to this country.
Oh yeah, well, it's the cheapest, most accessible form of information,
and it is the most validating as well. You know, I look at this quote from Obama, and it's like it should have little pictures of Hannity and Limbaugh and O'Reilly and Savage and the rest of those monsters. And it's not surprising then that they get bitter. They cling to guns or religion or antipathy to people who aren't like them or anti-immigrant sentiment or anti-trade sentiment as a way to explain their frustrations. Okay, let's go through that, Kevin.
Oh yeah.
Anti-trade, anti-immigrant sentiment. Well, we can put a picture of Lou Dobbs there, can't we?
Well, the thing is, you know, the Lou Dobbs and the Pat Buchanan's, it's not that they're against anti-trade or anti-immigrant. They just don't want immigrants living anywhere around them, in spite of who Lou Dobbs share his bed with.
Right. Exactly.
Okay.
Well, let's go to antipathy to people who aren't like them. In other words, racism. Who preaches racism? Michael Savage preaches racism. They cling to guns. Who's real big time pro gun? O'Reilly's big time pro gun. Sean Hannity's big time pro gun. Religion. How about James Dobson? How about the American Family Association? What he was doing, and if anybody would have paid attention, is that was a little itsy bitsy master class on how the American people have been divided, don't you think?
Okay, go ahead.
No, it's what I said is it's a master class on how the American people have been divided.
Oh yeah. Because, God forbid if you take the guns away.
Well, if all you got left is guns, you're going to get pretty testy about about your guns. If all you've got left is your faith, then your faith is going to become the most important thing to you because it's all you got left.
Well, you know what this sounds like to me?
What's that?
Sub-Saharan Africa, where that's all they have left, the religion and guns.
That could be where we're headed.
Well, yeah, and believe you me, as much as I'm proud to be black, I do not want to live in Sub-Saharan Africa.
No, not by any stretch of the imagination. But you know, but you'll notice that in that list of things that they cling to, they're all things that have no real value. In other words, you'll lose the roof over your head, but you'll cling to gun rights. You'll lose your car, but you'll cling to fundamentalism. You'll lose your credit gets trashed and you lose your job, but you'll cling to the idea of blaming people who aren't like you. So, yeah. You know, it's such a carnival dodge, Kevin, when you realize that this is things that have value, things that have worth, things that really make a difference in a family's life, that all gets taken away, but the Republicans say, yeah, but we respect your religion.
Oh, yeah, and I seriously doubt they do respect that, because a lot of times it boils down to, and I've been around a few church people in my day, are you saved? And to me, are you saved is code for are you attending my church?
Or are you part of my fundamentalist denomination?
Exactly.
Because I've never met an Episcopal yet who asks if you're saved, or a Lutheran either, for that matter.
Exactly.
Or a Quaker or an Anabaptist.
Yeah. And, you know, I tell people, yes, I am saved, and I grew up Episcopalian, as I said before, and I've never asked that of anyone.
Because it's none of anybody's business.
Exactly.
Unless you're a member of a sect or a cult that feels like they have some moral imperative to drag you into their denomination. Because when you get them all quiet and they think nobody's listening, these hardcore Baptists and various other fundamentalists will tell you that Episcopals are going to hell, Catholics are going to hell, Presbyterians are going to hell, everybody's going to hell but
them.
Whether it's Southern Baptists or Church of Christ, and I'm not talking about the good people like, you know, Reverend Wright's United Church of Christ denomination. I'm talking about the Church of Christ down south that doesn't believe in having a tambourine in the church. You know, they'll tell you, you know, we're the only ones. Everybody else is going to hell. You know, and, you know, God knows that the Muslims, oh, please.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, you know, like I said to a friend of mine, who does believe in the rapture, I said, you know, me personally, I really don't know, but I think a lot more of these people who think they're just going to disappear, they're going to be down here roasting alongside the rest of us, they're going to be in for a rude awakening, Bob.
Yeah, and it's tough to have friends who believe in that stuff, because every now and then I just get overcome, Kevin, and I just ask, you know, when you rapture, are you going to rapture in your clothes, or are you going to rapture naked?
Well, you know, I don't know. You know, I'm not an atheist, and because to me, you have to be pretty, I don't want to say arrogant, but confident or whatever, to be an atheist. You know, I'm not Mike Malloy. You know, but, and I do follow the tradition of the teachings of Christ, but the whole rapture and the end of days and nonsense.
Oh, I know, and yeah, there's horses involved too, I think, and a dragon, and yeah.
Yeah, I just say if it's going to happen, a lot of these people who profess to be rapture believers are going to be down here along with us, and I can't wait to see Tom DeLay have the brand on his forehead and burning alongside.
Oh, he's going to sprout horns. He's on the advanced team. Karl Rove, but yeah, he's a demon all by himself. He just is. But you know, I don't know what to call myself, because what I believe I consider to be incredibly private.
Exactly, and like your sex life and your income, it should be.
Yeah, that's a pretty short list. I mean, when you do talk radio, there's a short list of what you try to keep private, and I try to do that with whatever passes for my faith. I know I saw a photograph the other day. John Fox got me using StumbleUpon, and oh my God, that thing is addictive. But I found this really really neat photograph, and it was a side by side comparison of a picture of the universe next to a picture of a brain cell. They're almost identical.
Oh, yeah.
And that really has a lot to do with how I think the universe operates. As much as it would be, I guess, fun to have some form of this consciousness after death, I don't think it works that way.
Yeah.
But I think if anything does happen after death, how the decency with which one lives one's life has a lot to do with how it all pans out. Because, you know, if you live a bad life, you might wind up being like a pubic hair of the universe. If you live a good life, you might get to be part of the eyeballs.
Oh, yeah.
Man, is that weird. Sorry, that was totally uncalled for. I apologize. But, you know, that's what happens when I have too much time on my hands. I think about that stuff.
Yeah, well, you're not the only one, my brother. I just say, you know, the dismantling of government who are the two direct beneficiaries of the dismantling of good government? Corporations and churches.
Yeah, isn't that the truth?
And that's why so many poor people have voted Republican. You know, besides the whole bigotry factor.
Yeah, because they've co-opted religion, and they've turned us into corporatists.
Yeah.
I don't know what happened to it, but and I don't know. I'll try to find the website and maybe mention it later in the week. I saw this brilliant little semi-animated film about our consumer culture, and there was a quote in it from an economist or a manufacturing marketing expert from the 50s talking about the America that we would have to create. And it was to a T where we are now, and it was quite not depressing, but it was certainly demoralizing. It shows that where we are now, how we got from there to here, was a very deliberate act. It wasn't anything in the way of an accident. You know, this is not a boating accident, and we're going to need a bigger boat. So when I find that, I'll either send it to one of the ninjas and ask him to post a link on the blog, or because I'm incompetent to do that, by the way. Not very good at it. On the other hand, or I'll mention it on the show, or maybe even play some of the, I'll take some of the audio of it, because it's just mind-boggling. And the film was great, too. So there, that's a big old tease, but yeah, I'll have a run at it.
Oh, yeah. But, you know, it just frightens me. Like I said, if McCain wins, I'm thinking about immigrating. I really am. I have to consider immigrating.
You know, I got an email from one of our listeners, Ty wrote in and had spent considerable amounts of time in the Scandinavian or Nordic countries, you know, from Denmark to Sweden, Finland, that kind of stuff. And those places are looking better and better.
Oh, yeah.
And I just have to get over my fundamental distaste for cold weather.
Well, you live in West Virginia in the mountains, Bob.
Yeah, but not that cold.
It gets pretty cold up there. I've been up there in the wintertime.
Oh, I cried. This is a totally different story, but I crossed the Eastern Continental Divide on US 33 yesterday, and it was snowing. I mean, it was snowing. And, you know, I started swearing. Black staggin' razzle flassin' neck. Snow!
Damn!
You know, and I was at 3,500 feet above sea level. And I don't know, the older, you know, when I was a little kid growing up in Alabama, snow was cute. Snow was fun because down there they have no way of dealing with it. So, you know, three flakes fly, they call off school and declare martial law, and everybody clears out the milk and bread. But living in it, not so much. But, you know, it's not even the snow. It's when all the really hard winter goes away and you're left with this sort of goopy, wet, cold, muddy, nasty, gray stuff, and it's like you're just, yeah, come on, you know, because it was Saturday was a beautiful day. It got up around 70-75 degrees. I come home, it's 35. In a way, this is early spring is the time of year I think I hate most, because it's not one thing or the other. It's just this nasty mix. But if I could get over my distaste for cold weather, I could think seriously about Denmark or Sweden,
well,
or Norway.
Trying to get into that country, too.
Well, that's true. I'm not sure. I might be persona non grata for all we know.
Yeah, because those countries are kind of hard. Because if that's the case, we'll all be moving.
I don't know. I think I could do stuff. But, you know, there's the language barrier, too, which is what keeps me thinking about Belize.
Yeah, but
I mean, but then again, I could learn Spanish. Mexico's beginning to look good.
I'm thinking about, you know, my family's from Jamaica. I'm thinking about moving back there.
Yes, yes, indeed. There are worse places.
Yeah, you know, even though there's a lot of crime there, it's starting, you know, I kind of like a lot of political, you know, as far as the global arena they've taken on certain things. I don't know if you know about this, but you've heard of the Haitian president there. I forgot his name.
The former one, Aristide?
Aristide, who was basically overthrown by a U.S.-backed coup,
mm-hmm.
sent to the Central African Republic. And basically he was told by Condoleezza Rice he wasn't even allowed in this hemisphere.
Yeah, don't let the sun set on you here, right?
Yeah, well, basically, you know, it was the Jamaican government who basically gave him asylum and stood up to the United States.
Gotta admire that.
And, you know, and Jamaica's like, well, if you're going to invade us, what reason do you have? We're one of your closest allies.
And that's what happens when you, you know, when you confront it. Sometimes, see, dealing with the Bush administration, Kevin's like dealing with a psychotic. Well, it's not like dealing with a psychotic. It is dealing with a psychotic.
Yeah.
Because on the one hand, if you cross them, they're liable to have you killed. On the other, if they think there's a likelihood that you could fight back, they're not interested. Because at the end of the day, the Bush administration is comprised of big old stinking cowards.
Oh, yeah. And that's the thing. You know, you got to call their bluff. Because even though they did try to have an Al-Qaeda link based in Jamaica at one time.
No, I thought I caught it all. I missed that.
Well, it is a possibility. A lot of Jamaicans are of Middle Eastern and East Indian descent, but there's hardly, most of them are like Christian converts. But they try to do it because, don't forget that guy Reed, who had the bomb in his sneakers.
Yeah, Richard Reed, the show.
Yeah, he's Jamaican, and they try to link him to that, you know. strange thing, you know. And yeah, there's a very tiny Muslim community, extremely tiny, if there is any in Jamaica. But
I think I would feel a lot better about Jamaica generally if they would get over the rampant homophobia that runs around that island.
Oh well, yeah. Well, that's Caribbean culture in general, and
Oh, yeah. It is not exclusive to Jamaica, but no.
Yeah. And, you know, it's something I don't care for either, but it's a reality. And, again, I guess that goes back to... you know, people are not enlightened, I guess. And, you know, there's no such thing as a perfect society. You know, but strange enough, it goes on.
Yeah.
Even though it's blatantly homophobic, it does occur. They have resort areas catered to that. You know, which is funny.
And there are people trying to change it.
Yeah.
So, yeah. You know, there is hope. There's hope here. If we can just keep our eye on the ball.
Yeah, it's like even in the rap community, there's blatant homophobia. And
yes.
Yeah, and I said I am waiting for the first openly gay gangster rapper because I know it's out there. Because a lot of them to earn their street cred have gone through the prison system, and there's no way you can tell me stuff don't go on in there.
Without a doubt. But see, that doesn't count.
Oh, you did what you had to do on the inside.
Yeah, right.
No. I don't buy that one.
There's a scene in L.A. Confidential that has to do with some of that that's just...
Yeah, I don't buy that. I really don't.
Yeah. I'd rather die than... No. See, you could have, but no, you didn't, and so... Right. No, I get it. Hey, Kevin, I got to roll along. Good talking to you, brother.
Okay, buddy.
See you, man.
Yeah.
Bye now. And let's see if you guys have hung on. Nope, you didn't. Lines are open if you want to get involved now. We'll take a little break. We're almost halfway through the final hour, but we'll take a little break, and I'll attend to some stuff. And come back after a little musical interlude. Listen, I just need I need a chance to play the Drive-By Truckers once in a while, and this is a convenient excuse. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn. there's always a good reason to cut loose with the truckers, as far as I'm concerned. That's from the latest album, which is pure genius. It's called the album's Brighter Than Creation's Dark. That song is Goode's Field Road, G-O-O-D-E apostrophe S, Field Road. And just in case, by virtue of the connection, you didn't happen to catch it all, this is the lyric. Honey, take care of the children. Make them do as they're told. I got a meeting in the morning down at the end of Goode's Field Road. Nothing much for a man in my position. A man like me don't last too long in prison. And all those friends down at the police department will act like they never had anything to do with me. Started out down at the junkyard taking orders from a moron. And a man my size don't like taking orders from anyone. Bought myself an old beat-up wrecker. Built an empire with my labor, brains, and sweat. But it's hard to make an honest living, and a man takes any help he gets. You know, I wonder, well, let's see. Nothing much for a man in my position, a second mortgage, and three college kids' tuition, and all of them friends that I helped along, all of them friends I helped along the way will act like they never had anything to do with me. But you and me, we had us some good times, and I've always been a family man deep down. Ain't much a believer of hiring work from out of state, but they'll be asking questions when I'm found. They'll be asking questions when I'm found. Honey, take care of the children. Pay the house off when the salvage yard gets sold. And you don't know nothing when the insurance man asks questions about what went down at the Goode's Field Road. I wonder, you know, golly, I wonder if that's elitist. You know what I mean? I wonder if talking about, singing about, writing about the lives of middle America is always elitist. What is it that makes it elitist? And I'm not asking this as a smartass. I'm asking this legitimately. What makes it elitist just because Barack Obama talks about it? You know, I think about the Truckers tune, Putting People on the Moon. Mary Alice had a baby, and he looked just like I did. We got married on a Monday, and I've been working ever since. Every week down at the Ford plant, but now they say they're shutting down. Goddamn Reagan in the White House, and no one there gives a damn. Double-digit unemployment, TVA be shutting down, while over there in Huntsville they're putting people on the moon. Mary Alice got cancer just like everybody here. Seems everyone I know is getting cancer every year. And we can't afford no insurance. I've been 10 years unemployed. So she didn't get no chemo, so our lives was destroyed. And nothing ever changes. The cemetery gets more full. Now over there in Huntsville, even NASA's shut down too. Another joker in the White House said a change was coming round. But I'm still working at the Walmart and Mary Alice in the ground. And all them politicians, they all lying sacks of shit. They say better days upon us, but I'm sucking left hind tit. And the preacher on the TV says it ain't too late for me, but I bet he drives a Cadillac, and I'm broke with hungry mouths to feed. I wish I was still an outlaw. It was a better way of life. I could clothe and feed my family and still have time to love my pretty wife. If you say I'm being punished, ain't he got better things to do? Turning mountains into oceans, putting people on the moon. Is that elitist? By my lights, that's truth. Unvarnished, unflyblown truth. And it is no more and no less than what Barack Obama was talking about. But we've got to make a tempest in a teapot out of it, and in an act of political desperation, you've got a candidate who latches onto it, hoping that it will play in some form of class warfare against people who are already hurt. And I think that's the thing that pisses me off the most, is the idea of using American voters who are already in agony to score political points. But there is some question, if you listen to the background noise, there is some question as to whether or not it may be backfiring. Hard to say at this point. But this is... This is from an appearance in Pittsburgh today. Obama had appeared there earlier, and Senator Clinton appeared later. This is what happened.
I understand my opponent came this morning and spent a lot of his time attacking me. Well,
cheers.
Well, you know, I know that many of you, like me, were disappointed by recent remarks that he made. And I
you
think
hear that?
It's important that...
No, we weren't disappointed. No.
You know, we give people the chance to really compare and contrast us. You know, I am well aware that at a fundraiser in San Francisco... he said some things that many people in Pennsylvania and beyond Pennsylvania have found offensive. He was explaining...
Then let the people who found it offensive tell us that they found it offensive. That's all I'm saying. Because until we can find some real honest-to-God Americans who were offended by a little bit of truth-telling... I tend to view this as just another round of political kabuki. But we'll continue.
To a small group of his donors, what people who live in small towns right here in Pennsylvania are like, and why some of you aren't voting for him. But instead of looking at himself, he blamed them. He said that they cling to religion and guns and dislike people who are different from them. Well, I don't believe that.
You don't? You really don't? After 16 years of being slurred and slimed and filthed for exactly the very same reasons, Senator, you don't believe that? I don't believe you.
I believe that people... don't cling to religion, they value their faith. You don't cling to guns, you enjoy hunting or collecting or sports shooting. I don't think he really gets it that people are looking for a president who stands up for you and not looks down on you.
See, that's the thing, the part that bothers me. Because to reiterate my earliest point from this evening, it is not a matter of looking down that she is condemning. She can't use the word, but it is the fact that a black man is having compassion for poor whites. And that is what is the coin of the realm in this instance. And that is what I find regrettable and disturbing and beneath Senator Clinton and beneath anyone who talks about any form of appealing to what Lincoln called the better angels of our nature. Highly disturbing. Highly disturbing. Let's go to the phones. Hi, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob.
Hey, Juanita.
Disgusting, ain't it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is.
Is that the new dirty word?
Elitist.
Elitist.
And, you know, it's funny. It's bothersome to me, Juanita, because it is being treated like a dirty word.
Yeah, it is. Uh-huh.
But where it comes from is more disturbing to me.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
for years and years and years, it was what the Republicans used on Democrats. Wow, they're just elitists.
Uh-huh. Elitist liberals.
They elitist liberals. They want to tell us what's good for us.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm disgusted and regusted and pergusted and all kind of gusted with the whole.
You're multigusted.
Caboodle.
Yeah. You're multigusted.
Yeah. Well, there you go. And Lieberman. My goodness, that little twerp.
Oh, isn't he? Isn't he?
And you can see them little wheels turning in his head, even though you can't see him. You hear him. You hear those little wheels. Oh, I can twist this around.
I would hesitate to call him a Marxist.
Yeah. I did. Last week they had on The View, they had John McCain was on there. You know, they had Obama on. The week before, and I was surprised that Barbara asked him some pretty well-pointed questions. He was talking about how well the war was going, and she said, well, how can you say that? So there's more deaths now than ever, you know, and of course you know how he is. And then that Joy, she just straight out says she doesn't believe anything that Bush says, and she doesn't like him. And today they had a big brouhaha on there pretty much, cause she said that, he was so much like, Bush. And, of course, Elizabeth had to say that, well, what about, Obama and that preacher? Can't let that go.
No, oh, you know, I...
Well, he's not a president.
I have to really, really watch my mouth when it comes to talking about that woman, that Elizabeth, what's her name,
yeah.
Hasselbeck or whatever.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to say any of the really fun words.
But she's an
idiot. She is a sure enough idiot.
Well, she's very sure she knows what's what. And one day she's going to be let down, kind of like Kathy Lee Gifford. But, and I don't even think Cassidy Gifford was that narrow. But, my son says she gets talking points from some guy on that show every day.
Oh, I'm sure she does.
Uh huh. But one time I called her a Nazi and I apologized for that because I should have.
Because you were being kind of hard on the Nazis? No, I'm sorry. that was evil of me. She
but you
doesn't.
Know what is sad to me is Hillary and Bill. They both, especially Bill, you know, I think he's really screwing himself royally because, you know, now he's defending what she said about being shot at.
Oh, I saw. Yeah.
And now she's backing down on what she said about her shooting experience. And, did you know that, Dick challenged her to a duck hunting duel?
Oh, you got to be joking, right?
Well, that's what they said.
Oh, mercy.
They were talking about that.
Well, you know, but he just he'd just turn around and shoot her in the face.
But they said that Bill was talking about like she ought to do it. I said, what is the matter with him? Maybe he's got Alzheimer's. You know, he is so loved in all this world. And to me now, I can only go by the people that I know around here, you know, and I'm acquainted with. But the black people, you know, if they ever get out with him, and they're not going to appreciate what they're doing to Obama. And I think it's totally wrong.
It is, and that's a shame because Bill Clinton had such tremendous. He was bridging a gap making what I thought was progress, and I
just think that they're following somebody's advice that some way is wrong. But then remember when he was president, he had that Dick guy in his, what's that guy?
Oh, Dick Morris, the toe sucker.
Yeah. You know, so he's done some questionable things. But I think he's really going to mess himself up if he doesn't stop, and her too, because she's getting to be less and less credible. And,
you heard that audio there, Juanita. I mean, when she started in, you know, going to give Obama down the road.
Yeah.
You heard him telling her, no, no, no.
Yeah, that's so ridiculous. I want them to talk about what they want to do for the country and talk about what McCain wants to do to the country.
Yeah, what they want to do for the country and what he wants to do to the country.
Right.
You hit the nail on the head, mm-hmm. Juanita.
And they were on the View, they were talking about that, I had a senior moment.
Speaking of which, though, I heard a great little line yesterday when we were visiting with the folks at the Unitarian Church up in Northern Virginia. Older gentleman who was just a wonderful, wonderful man. One of the younger fellows had said something the wrong way or said the wrong thing, and he just leaned over and whispered to me and said, "He's having a junior moment." I'm hanging on to that one.
Yeah.
Because most of my life is a junior moment, I think.
Well, I had plenty of those when I was younger, too. My daddy used to say, if you're so forgetful now, what are you going to be like later on? But it just kind of breaks my heart that, you know, Bill was really loved all over the world, but I think he's going to lose it if he keeps on.
I think you're right.
I would love to see some, like you said, Dennis Kucinich or John Edwards, because I'm very liberal, and I don't think either one of them is liberal enough. But maybe after Susan gets a hold of Obama's camp and tells them about the mountaintop removal.
Oh, I think she's going to take him to the mountain.
Well, I hope so, and if anybody can, I believe she can do it. You know, I heard an ad for the Clean Coal.
Yes, you did. Are you talking about on that CNN thing last night?
Yeah.
I'm
part of it.
Juanita, I'm sitting here looking at a news story arising out of some of that, and there's a big block ad in it, and it was on the TV, too. Clean Coal, America's power.
Yeah.
Click here to learn how clean coal will power our future. Mm-hmm. You know what? Those were men of the cloth that were asking those questions last night. And frankly, I don't care. I don't know offhand who they were. But I question the sincerity. I question the veracity. And I question the integrity of any preacher or priest or reverend who would, knowing full well that he was participating in a program that was sponsored by an organization that wants to destroy the lives of people all over this country, I question that person's credentials as a follower of God. You know what
Me
I mean?
Too. Me too. Me too. That's another thing. I got upset going to church because they were talking about people loving animals more than they love people. Well, the animals help us to live, you know, if nothing else. I'm just, I don't know. No, I guess I just see things from a different point of view.
Well, I would be. We would be a lot better off if people, if more people saw things from your point of view, Juanita. And I say that with all sincerity.
Thank you, Anna. You too. And you know, Bob, you are remarkable.
Say goodnight now, Juanita.
Good night.
Good night. Talk to you later.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye bye.
Oh, Juanita, what are we going to do with you? A couple of emails rolling in to share with you before we close out this evening. Remember, Peter Godbold, by no fault of his, will be a rerun again tonight. But he'll be back tomorrow night if they'll just fix the daggum phones and the internet where he lives. That's all we ask. From our pal Cindy, Dog and Pony on TV. You got it right. The TV freaks run the Dog and Pony show on TV, and the name of the game is not to tell the real news. Obama and Hillary both know how it works, and they use, and she's rather emphatic about this, they use our donations to their campaigns to feed the Dog and Pony show and make the station managers happy, really. So the only way we can show our displeasure, quit pay TV. She also adds, I think that Hillary is a scripted candidate. Her scripter is Carville, and he's a jerk. He's so nuts he married you-know-who, Mary Madeline, who said in the last day or so that Dick Cheney is a genius, by the way. Someone told him it was Magdalene, and he thought he was getting a hot, oh, Cindy. Married Mary Madeline, and somebody told him it was Magdalene, and he thought he was getting a hot hooker. You're meaner than I am, Cindy. This whole campaign is yesterday's news. I'm so bored with it. Hillary says she's like a boxer. Then why did she dump the fight for single-payer nationalized medicine like a log when corporations jumped in the early 90s? She didn't stand up for us long there, did she? She'll dump us again when they wave their dollars. What do you call that? A word that I'm not going to use. And by the way, just a little bit of an affirmation. Hey, Bob, amen. Brighter than creation's dark just gets better and better with each listen. Best effing band in the world. Sinkhole and Zip City from other albums are also strong. That's our pal David in South Carolina. And really, I had planned to try to make mention of this, and Juanita helped us along by being ahead of the curve, like she so frequently is. Do you think that the clergy that participated in the Dog and Pony show on CNN last night knew that they were out whoring for big coal? Do you think they knew? Would any of them have walked away? Or better yet, would any of them have actually communicated? What would that change? What would that do? What kind of a signal would that send? If just one of these people who got called into these Dog and Pony shows said, look, I just found out that this is being sponsored by people who are destroying Americans' homes and communities and poisoning their children and their futures. I can't be a part of that. And said that to the campaigns. Would they just go out and find a man of the cloth who was willing to do that and move on? Or would the campaigns think about it? Why did CNN go out? Well, CNN, that's the answer. CNN didn't go out. See, Big Coal came and found CNN. Because Big Coal is running scared. Big Coal is scared teetotally to death. Because of you. You have Big Coal on the run. You have the people who are destroying this country on the run. And that's why they're having to spend millions and millions and millions of dollars to create these phony front groups to try to confuse and lie to the Americans who haven't figured out the skinny on coal yet, especially mountaintop removal coal. That's why they have to do it, because of you. Because you do know, and you're talking to your neighbors, and you're wearing out your members of Congress. You're demanding support for the Clean Water Protection Act. I love those words from Gandhi. First they ridicule you, then they fight you, then you win. We're winning. We are winning. And what a victory it will be when we know that our children are no longer poisoned with the mercury and the radiation that comes out of coal. When we know that the blasting has ceased in Appalachia and elsewhere. When we know that babies aren't born with IQ deficits so that the likes of Don Blankenship can get a little bit richer. What a day that will be, and what heroes you all will be. Because you're heroes already. So that's the show for tonight. Thank you very much for joining me, joining us, joining together. Thank you for joining together. Thank you for going to CRMW.net, as I know you have. Thank you for your determination to be a part of the solution. Thank you for your heroism. Thank you to the bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch. You inspire me every minute of every day. Thanks to our IT professional, Peter Godbold, and to our chief engineer, John Fox. Thanks to the hardest working man in liberal talk, Ben Birch. WhiteRoseSociety.org. Ben Birch needs your help, too. Because the streaming that happens for the horn all happens because of Ben. And always, 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 RMR, Gina, it's all for you.
Good evening, America, and good morning, world. Welcome to Book, Chapter, and Verse 118 of Strictly Confidential. I am Peter Godbold, and welcome to the LGBT version of Conversation Radio, exclusively on the listener-supported Head-On Radio Network. Also brought to you by Coal River Mountain Watch over at CRMW.net. And we are happy to have their support. It's a fine organization, the CRMW.net. strictlyconfidential.net. Thank you for making Strictly Confidential a part of your day. Today is, in fact, Tuesday, February 26th of 2008. So if you're listening shortly after 9 p.m., approximately 9.02 p.m. Eastern Time, you're listening to a live show, and you're welcome to call in and participate. We'll talk about what's on your mind and what's coming up on the show. I'll give you the phone numbers in just a moment. The show site is strictlyconfidentialradio.com, and there you're going to find links to all of the guests as well as to the audio archives from past shows. You'll find links to the chat room, which is active as I speak. Some of the world's smartest people are in that chat room, and the find links at strictlyconfidentialradio.com to the Head On Radio Network main site, and you can find out about all of the other progressive programming on the Head On Radio Network, of which I am only a very small part. You'll find links at strictlyconfidentialradio.com to our MySpace page, more information about the show, and links to help you locate music that you hear on the show. The toll-free lines are 877, the number 4, Head On. That translates into 877-443-2366. If you have unlimited long distance, please use that and save the studio a nickel or a buck. We are listener-supported. That would be area code 304-658-3333. That's 304-658-3333, and it rings in West Virginia. Email arrives to Peter at headonradionetwork.com, and I do try to check the email during the breaks, and you can communicate with me that way, or by telephone, or by joining us in chat. We are all there waiting for you to arrive. It's an integral part of the network. If you're missing chat, you're indeed missing the visual aids for the Head On Radio Network. You're indeed missing the visual aids. You know, what a remarkable night. Bob's show just preceded this, and we had a new caller, first-time caller. His name was John, and John is, in fact, like so many of our listeners, an articulate and very bright person and involved in higher mathematics. You got to love and be proud of a network, to be associated with a network like this that attracts listeners and callers like that. It just never ceases to amaze me. I couldn't be prouder to be a part of this network. We also had a new chatter this evening who streams this show, the Strictly Confidential Radio show. Apparently he streams that via the archives and listens to it as a podcast during the car or during his commute in his car. So we're always glad to have new folks.